So before I begin, I do want to give some acknowledgments to the folks that are really behind all of the cumulative risk work we do at the center, particularly Dr. Nolan and John Sullivan, but also our colleagues at the University of Texas Health Science Center, Drs. Ken Sexton and Steve Linder, our community partners both in Galveston, Texas, and in Port Arthur, Texas, Hilton Kelly in particular, and our funders, of course. The National Institutes for Minority Health and Health Disparities, as well as the Health Impact Project, which is a collaboration of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Pew Charitable Trusts with support from the Kresge Foundation. So as I'm sure many of you in the room are aware of, environmental justice communities are often faced with a huge range of inequitable challenges. Not only are they faced with environmental toxicants, such as being close proximity to a refinery or some other point polluter, or perhaps even a major road or something affiliated with the goods movement, but there are also social stressors in the environments, typically. Access to food or reliable transportation can be a challenge. There's usually high levels of poverty in these communities. Access to quality education can be somewhat disparate. Housing can be an issue as well. One of the challenges that we're facing is how do you combine all of these different sources of stress and risk in the community, especially when you're comparing apples and oranges in this case. It's difficult to put them together. One approach that we're experimenting with is this idea of systems thinking and systems sciences. It's been getting a lot of increased attention lately in public health. There are, I believe, two calls for proposals at the NIH that deal specifically with systems thinking, and they also mention systems thinking in several other RFAs. It approaches problem solving by looking at problems not as cause and effect, but rather as components of a broader system where feedback loops can reinforce problems over time, and solutions can actually backfire and make the problem worse due to delays that weren't foreseen in the system. excuse me. One of the methodologies that's used in systems thinking is called system dynamics modeling. And what it does, it is a modeling tool for examining changes in a system over time. It includes elements like those feedback cycles I talked about, the accumulations of what are called stocks and flows, and it incorporates time and time delays into the system. So, for example, a causal or feedback loop might look like this, and it finally solves the great age question of which came first, the chicken or the egg. Well, they're happening concurrently within the system. The way to interpret this would be as the number of chickens increases, the number of eggs increases, which reinforces the number of chickens increasing. But as chickens are increasing road crossings, or increasingly crossing the road, there are fewer chickens, my guess is, because they're nearby a heavily trafficked road, perhaps. An environmental justice community of chickens, perhaps. Sure. There's also this idea of stocks and flows. And the way you might conceptualize a stock and a flow, it's like a bathtub. The amount of water in a bathtub is dependent on two things, or three things actually. The amount of water at baseline within the bathtub, the amount of water that's coming in through the faucet, and the amount of water leaving through the drain. So if you can imagine looking at this model developed by Milstein and others, there's a population without disease, and then as they progress into developing a disease, a certain amount of people will move into the undiagnosed prevalence stock, and then as they become diagnosed, they'll move into the, where's my pointer, there we go, the diagnosed prevalence, and then ultimately either into recovery or to death. And you can model the accumulations and changes over time in these different bins. And just to give you a sense of how complex these systems thinking maps can get, here's one that was developed in the UK looking at obesity. So this is just a small view of the different determinants of obesity and how they're interrelated. They've grouped them together so that you have food production and food consumption over here in the purple and green areas. Here's individual physiology and physiology in general, individual physical activity in the physical activity environment. But what it what's really showing is just how interconnected all of these different processes are. So if you're targeting just one of these elements in an intervention, you can see how much effort in the system is pushing against you being able to succeed. So taking a systems perspective, a step back and looking at the overall process can potentially enlighten us to some future intervention strategies at the systems level. One of the ways we've been applying it here is to try to see how the different elements within an environmental justice community system may interact. Just as an example here, we have two elements of the system. One is the amount of commercial and residential area within a community, and the other is industrial activity. And you can see as industrial activity increases, the amount of pollution in theory increases as well, which reduces the desirability for commercial and residential development. This in turn lowers property value, which does two things. It will reduce the amount of commercial and residential area that's being developed and increase the amount of industry being developed because that property is now more feasible to be developed as an industrial process. So that's kind of a feed-forward loop or a reinforcing cycle. As the residential and community areas decrease, it decreases the access to critical amenities such as healthy food, access to care, availability of jobs also decreases, so that poverty will increase and ultimately lead to increased cumulative risk. The pluses and minuses may not look intuitive, but the way to interpret them is just from the previous, from the origin of the arrow to the factor that it's pointing towards, so that if you have a negative, every subsequent positive is a negative, if that makes any sense. So to get started, we wanted to test some of these concepts in Port Arthur. Port Arthur, Texas, was recently designated as an environmental justice showcase community by the EPA in 2010. Is that correct, John? Yeah. And our focus was really on what's called the West Side neighborhood, which is outlined here in red. It's predominantly African-American, very high poverty, and you can see it's surrounded on three sides by industry. At the south, you have the port of Port Arthur, and then you have the Valero refinery, the Motiva refinery, which is slated to be the largest in the United States when its latest upgrade is over, and then Flint Hills Chemical Plant just to the north as well. Also along the eastern edge here is a large rail line that effectively isolates the community from the rest of Port Arthur. What we wanted to do is to get we wanted to get a sense of the different elements within this community that would need to be included in our systems in our systems diagram. So we engaged a community mapping exercise using our colleagues at the Pacific Institute. What we did here was use these large aerial maps. Here's an example. And with little dots, we engaged the community to identify areas within their community that are strong, that are vital assets, things that benefit the community. We started off with a positive, and then we flipped it on its edge and said, okay, what are the threats to your community? Where are sources of risk? And we started off with the environmental sources because that was the main concern. But over the course of an evening, we went into more social aspects and eventually even went into some historical concepts within the community to get a sense of the community's history of how it became the community is today over time. And that was very enlightening. And you can see, you know, it was a lot of storytelling, a lot of qualitative kinds of conversations, but what we were doing was documenting the different factors that were sources of risk to the community. And once we were done, we put it into our GIS. You can see the neighborhood we're interested in outlined in purple with the industry covered and shaded in the hash marks. This map shows places where you can access food. The nearest grocery store, what we were calling a healthy food outlet, so somewhere that has lean meat, fresh fruits and vegetables, bread, milk, all those wonderful things in one place to shop, It was about anywhere from 2 to 4 miles away. Vehicle ownership is also very low in this community, so you can imagine it is a challenge for these residents just to get food. There were two convenience stores in the neighborhood, but they were mostly selling things like canned ravioli and the standard kind of convenience store foods. And here's just a sense of where the where those healthier food outlets are across the entire region in relationship to the neighborhood. So you can see how that neighborhood's not only facing environmental concerns, being so close and proximate to industry, to the port activities and goods movement, but also they're looking at social stressors. Also not included in this map are concentrated poverty, concentrated minorities, racial and ethnic segregation in the area, and several other concerns. Finally, one of the concerns also was access to child care. A lot of families have struggles in maintaining multiple jobs and trying to find somewhere for their children to go. There was one licensed child care center within the neighborhood, but what that is, that's the Head Start program at the public school, and it has somewhat of a limited enrollment, particularly with recent reductions in funding. So we wanted to try to take this process a step further and actually try to quantify these risks with the idea that once you start getting some numbers behind it, then you can plug them into a system dynamics model. We did this in Galveston using a health impact assessment approach. The health impact assessment was looking at potential neighborhood level impacts on the siting of public housing that was destroyed in Hurricane Ike. What we used here were 17 different determinants of health that we were able to identify data sets for. The indicators all needed a solid evidence linking that indicator to health, but also needed to have a strong quantitative data set available as well. We looked at both salutogenic and pathogenic factors, so things that were promoting health as well as things that were deterring good health within the community. This is just a list of the different indicators. And you can see they kind of run the gamut, everything from truck routes and proximity to potential environmental hazards to pedestrian safety and alcohol vendors. We even included whether or not an area was within our floodplain. If you aren't familiar, Galveston is a barrier island, which is a nice way of saying a sandbar, along the Gulf of Mexico. So we do have some flooding concerns, especially when it's foggy. We looked at indicators two different ways, just depending on what data we had. There were proximity indicators, so how far is a certain census block from, say, the grocery store or from the hospital. We calculated that variable using the NEAR tool in ArcGIS. Then there were density blocks, or density indicators. We used just concentrations of indicators within a half mile, a quarter mile, and came up with a density measure that way. You can imagine we were starting to get into the problem of comparing apples and oranges here. But really, once we really got into it, we were comparing all kinds of different fruit, and I think the basket was there as well. So we were really, really facing a challenge of how to standardize across the different measures. So what we used was an approach to standardize each of the scores using Z-score standardization so that we were able to compare across indicators using standard deviations. It put everybody into a common unit, and it enabled us to calculate a cumulative score of potential health impact. Also recognizing that not all indicators impacted health equally, we wanted to weight each of the scores based on the indicators. So we were able to calculate a weighted score using a weighting formula that was derived from both strength of evidence and impact. So the strength of evidence was based on what literature were available, if there was a meta-analysis or several peer-reviewed studies that was weighted higher than something that was more in the gray literature or even anecdotal evidence. We scored it using the consensus of three project researchers. And then finally, we vetted it with our community steering committee just to make sure that our weights made sense in Galveston. And that actually provided us a good bit of feedback. With those weights, then we calculated our weighted cumulative score and then calculated relative percentiles for each census block. And you can see here that it distributed pretty well. The score itself is somewhat meaningless outside of Galveston, but it shows you kind of relatively where one block would lie compared to the rest of the blocks in Galveston from a cumulative risk standpoint. We did have some limitations with that approach. It used an as the crow flies distance, so the point from here to there, rather than taking into account the road or street network, which is can be a major issue in Galveston. The establishment of the weights was subjective. We did involve three different opinions of the researchers, but ultimately it still was subjective. We also assumed a linear relationship between distance or density and the health impact, so that 1 foot versus 10 feet, the change in impact was assumed to be linear, when in reality it might actually be more curvilinear, so we need to refine that process as well. And then also, the comparisons are only valid for within the geographic boundaries within the study. So our findings can't be translated into other communities unless we use the same data sets that are available and compare them and score them all together. So it's one of the limitations to that approach. So what do we do from here? We want to move forward with developing our system dynamics model. Now that we do have some quantitative data to feed into the model, we want to validate these approaches in other EJ communities, but what that involves is coming up with a formal process for formally identifying an EJ community. We suspect in Texas that we do have several EJ communities that aren't typically considered EJ communities because we haven't gone through a process of systematically identifying them, and the residents may not realize that they are that close and at risk for potential environmental exposures. And then finally, we want to test some intervention strategies. The nice thing about a systems approach using system dynamics modeling is you can play or model, I should say, interventions within the system and see how the system will react over time. And we look forward to being able to do that. So at this point, I want to invite Dr. Nolan up.